It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's time for the Fantasy Points Podcast, brought to you by FantasyPoints.com. Top-level fantasy football and NFL betting analysis from every perspective and angle, from numbers to the film room, with a single goal: to help you score more fantasy points.
Hi, I'm Eric Froton. This is the CFF All Access Podcast, where today we will be through a spring game roundup of eight different games. But first, did want to close the book on the quarterbacks. We finished out and rounded out the bottom five of our top 10. And I did want to close the book on that because I was unable to be here last week. However, when we brought up the great Jackson Arnold, when we first had that discussion before Michael Bainbridge, who will be joining us shortly, was able to have a pretty robust discussion about him last week, we had not had the Oklahoma spring game. So I am extremely excited to talk to our esteemed panel about how they feel about Jackson Arnold after that spring game, and then we will get into the rest of them. So without any further ado, Josh Chevalier, Michael Bainbridge, and of course, Zach Hall, my friends, compatriots. I didn't let them know what the open was going to be and that I was going to come at them about Jackson Arnold, since I didn't have the chance to talk to my friend Josh and Zach, who ranked him 14th QB overall before the magical spring game performance we saw out of Jackson Arnold. Josh, how badly do you feel that you disrespected Jackson Arnold by not having him in the top 10 after seeing that amazing spring game?
Dude, I am so excited that you brought up Jackson Arnold in the Oklahoma spring game. Because I want to ask you.
Oh, no. I know where this is going.
How bad do you feel for questioning Mike Bainbridge about our boy, Deion Burks? Because, I don't know, man. That guy looked pretty good in that spring game. So I'm turning it back to you.
A couple of touchdowns, right? Just a couple of touchdowns.
Hundred yards, you know?
I am glad you brought up Deion Burks, though, to be honest with you. Because don't think I haven't done my homework on Deion Burks. And I'm not ready to reinforce my take on Mr. Burks. By the way, do you know that Deion Burks, last year at Purdue, right? The throw on the ball, the measure of how a CFF receiver is going to perform is, are they going to get 100 targets? Well, our friend Deion Burks got 95. All right, he caught 47 of them. That's a sub 50% catch rate over there in Purdue. But somehow, Deion Burks, oh, watch out against the second team defense. You want to know why I'm not impressed with Deion Burks? In those 95 targets, 629 yards, okay? Pedestrian. You know what he was very adept at doing? He's really good at dropping passes. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 15% drop rate for our friend Deion Burks there. That was one of the highest in the nation. That's top 10, in a ignominious stat. You don't want to be top 10 in. But what happens when, it's a contested catch situation, when he's not streaking bare naked down the field against a second-team defense in the spring game? Oh, yeah. He caught, over his career, 7 of 32 contested targets. A robust 22% contested catch rate. On 6 of his targets, he had 95 targets last year. 6 of them went for interceptions. This is from Dylan Gabriel, who transferred over to Oregon, right, to take over for Bo Nix and to light the world on fire for 40 points a game. So, forgive me if I'm not enamored with the profile of Mr. 5'10", 5'11", 190, Deion Burks, and his frying pan-like hands. Okay, Josh? I need to see more from Deion Burks. Nick Anderson was hurt. I have him as being probably a day two wide receiver next year if he chooses to come up. So that's how I feel about Deion Burks' little explosion. Michael, how do you feel?
Well, I feel redeemed because I was scolded for taking Deion Burks in 13th, 14th round. So I wonder how you feel about Kyle Francis taking Deion Burks in the 6th round in our latest draft after the spring game.
Overreaction, Michael. It's an overreaction. It's called sample size. And I just gave you the biggest sample size we got on him in his 22% contested catch rate. I'm Mr. Deion Burks. If he's not streaking naked, he's not catching the ball. Okay, and that's what he got to do against the second team defense. Wait until Nick Anderson's out there. Julio Farouk also not out there for this.
And
who? Game.
What? Jane Gibson too, I think. Did
right,
not
Jane
play
Gibson,
either.
Exactly. Yeah. The praying mantis himself, 6'5", 6'6", Jaden Gibson, who on a per catch basis was pretty effective. It wasn't on the touchdown part.
But again,
got a nose for the
point being, I was scolded for taking Deion Burks in the 14th round. Would you take Deion Burks in the 14th round now, Mr. Proton?
Yes.
Okay.
And Froton, I love how your argument against Deion Burks is he was playing against the second team.
That's right.
Which your boy, Jackson Arnold, was also throwing against the second team. And pretty much all of his yards came with our boy Deion Burks catching the ball. So, you know, was it Deion Burks? Was it Jackson Arnold? Maybe we'll have that question answered because they're just going to both crush it. We'll see.
All right. Fair enough. I'm glad you brought up, since we're closing the book on quarterbacks, my friend Josh, I think it's only fair that we do go to the tape, you know, and Josh didn't know I was going to do this here, but in our text thread, okay, speaking of quarterbacks, I got DMs from Katz, our friend Andrew Katz, the great Andrew Katz, asking whether Arch was going to replace Quinn, LOL. Ha ha ha, not happening unless Quinn defecates the bed. We'll use that word. We'll say defecates the bed. Are you kidding me right now, guys? Are you kidding me? Did you see that? Did we watch the same thing with Arch there looming over Quinn Ewers every single snap that's coming for this season, right? You think that in the fourth quarter when Texas is blowing a team out, we're not going to see a healthy dose of Arch? He went, again, we want to talk about the 14th round. He went, I think, in the 13th. I think JD took him. Mr. Electricity, JD Yonke, took him, I think, in the 13th or 14th round. I think that is a catastrophe. And that you were, especially if you don't go and get Arch, if you're not going to do the double up, right, and burn one of those QB spots on two QBs, which means you have to go 7 QBs instead of 6, right? If you're going to do that, you have to have him. Because either he's going to be getting snaps. I mean, he's going to get one out of every 4 series. They're going to be trotting Arch Manning out there. It's simply happening. You are leaving your flank exposed. And especially in a best ball format like we're doing the Champions League, you're going to go and you risk just tossing away one spot, just tossing it away. And one of the most important things, and the reason why I was so successful last year, Zach, I mean, maybe you can speak to this because you did end up winning it. Even though I just ran out of time, and you know I was coming for you. But security is so important when you're doing best ball leagues in March, in April, in May. Knowing Drew Aller, is he the best quarterback? No. Is he going to be able to crank out snaps? Yes. Fowler Nicolosi for Colorado State, I feel like he's been kind of undervalued, you know, in the early 20s. He is going to be throwing a lot of passes. We know that's going to happen. And I think the security in best ball formats is something that knocks down yours, in my opinion, and makes him, I mean, essentially a dart throw as opposed to somebody I invest in the 13th round.
That brings up a great point, Froton, of whether do spring games matter or not. And we are going to have a whole show on spring games alone and really wrestle down whether this question and get the answer to it. But before we do that, we are going to take a break here. And when we come back, we'll be discussing spring games and maybe a little Arch Manning Quinn Ewers.
Maybe.
All right. We are back. Look, Froton, wrap up a bow on Quinn Ewers, Arch Manning. There's a few teams that I'm going to confidently sit here and give my opinions on. UT is one of them. And Sark's got a plan in place again. unless they lose to Michigan in week two and Quinn looks terrible.
Which is very possible. Quinn. Which is very possible.
It's possible. It's happened. I mean, look, crazy things have happened.
I'm not surprised that Froton feels this way. We were burned too many times of betting over on a very realistic 60.5 receiving line prop for Xavier Worthy. 3 or 4 times we did that, and Ewers can't hit the broadside of a bar. So, yeah. No surprise that Froton feels about the Texas court situation.
There's a whole clip of you of receivers streaking down the field, I think specifically Worthy, over the past couple of seasons, and Ewers just over-chucking him. Like, man, I know you got the big arm, but I wish he'd set his feet a little more and, like, drive through the ball as opposed to kind of just flicking the ball downfield, which, you know, with velocity, because he's got – it's a great arm that he's got. He could throw those field side outs like nothing, you know, 15-yarder, but – and he sails him sometime. He gets on his toes, you know.
Yeah.
And I wish he'd cleaner. I'm not there. And seeing the way Arch threw, I don't feel good about putting Ewers on any of my best ball rosters. No way.
Yeah. No. I hear that. I mean, I just think Sark is a stubborn dude. Sark's gonna do what he's gonna do. But look, fair. Ewers throwing 15 to 20 yards and in is one of the best quarterbacks in college football. Unfortunately, Sark, he wants to bomb it for the first quarter and a half. And, you know, I don't know. I agree with everything you're saying. I think that Arch is a much better fit for what Sark wants to do. I just think, man, Narrative Street, if he can somehow get through the season with Quinn and he's a first or second round pick next year in a pretty wide open draft, there's not a lot of dominant QBs.
Yeah, there's Carson Beck, and we all know it. Carson Beck is the dominant QB. I'm disgusted by people like, oh, there's just nobody to look at. It's Carson Beck. Come on. It was there last year when I took him in all our C2C leagues. You know I was gobbling him up and all that. One of the reasons why I finished in second place, I was all over Carson Beck. And yeah, you should continue to be. He is the number one pick. I'm putting him in a 2025 mock draft. That's happening. Team Carson Beck. Go on.
But really helpful for college fantasy, right? With those negative rushing yards.
He is going to have negative. The Shedeur Sanders special in his 49 sacks. Yeah. Negative rushing yards guaranteed.
Yeah. Well, real quick question, and then we'll get into these actual spring games. Who gets drafted first, Ewers or DJU?
Ewers or DJU in NFL?
Is this,
or
college fantasy? Yeah. Or NFL?
No, NFL. NFL?
Oh, Ewers. I feel that. Yeah. But, geez, in college fantasy now, obviously beforehand, it was certainly – certainly Ewers. I mean, DJU, was he going like 27th, 28th, I want to say. NFL, oh yeah, I feel great about Ewers, Shane.
Yeah.
Our boy Shane win it.
Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of DJU.
Shane, that's going to be first... a Clemson game this year, I swear. And we're going to have to hang out this time. Kevin Coleman, our buddy, checking in.
Hey, look. Kevin, buddy. You sent me a Michigan hat.
Yeah.
You send me a Michigan helmet and it's going right up there. Right in
the middle, for sure. Wow. So, Bainbridge is on board with that plan. He's in.
I love it. That's what Mike, that's what you can get me for doing your wedding. A Michigan helmet.
Oh, you know, now we're right talking. There. Now we're talking, boys. All right.
Yeah. Let's go. All right. So we're gonna talk about spring games. We got 8 of them on the docket for today. We got 45 minutes left in the show. We'll see if we can hit all 8. I doubt we do, but that's our challenge for the night. And for us, we're going to start with FSU. And FSU is a team that's got DJU, the guy we were just talking about, and deciding whether it's going to be DJU or Quinn Ewers picked first. In this spring game, DJU did not look very good. I think his stats on the day were 12 of 27 for 177 yards. They started out in their spring game. They did a lot of red zone work to start, and then they did a few quarters worth of action. And it was DJU, and he was pretty much throwing to Malik Benson, was really his big target that he went after until Malik Benson got hurt about halfway through the spring game. I will say Malik Benson looks like he's going to be okay. He's going to be ready for camp. Looks like it was just a tweaked ankle. Roydell Williams had 5 carries for 51 yards. He looked pretty good at a 30-yard touchdown during the spring game. Jalen Lucas, transfer from Indiana, he looked awesome. He's a guy that I could totally see fitting into kind of that tailback role. Tony Pollard played that role, kind of a hybrid wide receiver running back role that Mike Norvell likes to unleash when he has those type of guys that can be both a runner and a receiver. But really, it was Roydell Williams, Jalen Lucas, and Malik Benson that really stole the show for me. DJU, again, looked iffy. We didn't see any of the young quarterbacks as both of them were hurt, so they didn't play in the spring game. And then Cam Davis, the freshman running back that a lot of people have as their RB1 in Devy, he did not play either due to injury. So really hard to kind of figure out the backup running back situation and what really FSU has in the future, although I know they're really high on their younger quarterbacks and then that running back Cam Davis as well. So outside of those guys, there really wasn't much here, I think, to talk about. But what did you guys get to watch the game? What do you guys see? What are your takes on NCFF, Florida State this year? Like, do they have options that you guys are going after at value and best balls? Where are you guys at with FSU?
I've got some Roydell Williams shares. I had some in Dynasty coming in regardless. I know specifically our industry Dynasty League that we do, 16 teamer, but I expect him to have the Trey Benson RB1 role. In the when it comes to Lucas, you know, he's not, as you said, he is a straight satellite back and a plus return man. So he had less than 300 yards rushing in each of the last 2 years. He had 4 yards a carry last year at Indiana. Just simply not what he does, but he, you know, got 53 targets, which is elite for a running back. So like you're saying, he's definitely got that third down back profile. Problem is you got Toa Philly, right? He's still in the backfield, and he was excellent at that last year. You know, he's slightly built in his frame. He's more, you know, straight up and down as opposed to, you know, rocked up. But he has the ability when he gets in space to rip off chunk plays. And it's going to be interesting to see how that three-man weave, because Norvell loves to have multiple backs that he rotates through. It remains to be seen just how high-end we can get Roydell Williams based on that three-man sort of share that he likes to do over there at Florida State. I have a couple. Like I said, I have a Dynasty. I think I took him in like the 15th round, is right around where he's going in the expert best ball leagues that we're doing right now, which, I mean, if he gets the kind of share that Benson did last year, especially towards the end of the season, I mean, he'll be worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What do you guys think, Mike and Zach?
I'm in on DJU simply from a floor perspective. And I was just looking back at if you look back at Mike Norvell's quarterback over the last decade, just one quarterback failed to hit a 20 point per game average. I think you get a really high floor with DJU. You know, passing ability aside, we know he's going to get some goal line touches because of his size and his running ability. So I like the floor where he's at, and like, you don't have to spend too much draft capital to get him, probably, you know, in between that 15 to 20 round range. So if you're doing a late QB strategy, I think he's a good place to start with, maybe as your QB2, QB3, if you're bypassing the early quarterbacks. Outside of that, I mean, Josh, I mean, you can probably speak to this too. Like, I think you were probably, you had the most shares of Malik Benson last year, and for obvious reasons that did not pan out. Could we see a bump this year? I think so. From reading all reports, he's established himself as the wide receiver one there. Doesn't seem like anybody else has really stepped forward in that group. So I think Malik Benson, Roydell Williams, DJU, and then, you know, kind of a crapshoot after that.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see, and we know that historically with Norvell, just that Memphis offense in general, wherever it's sort of his tree has gone, be it Kevin Johns, you know, Silverfield, who's there right now, there's a lot of times they want to give you a wide receiver one, you know, the DeMonte Coxey, Calvin Austin, sort of a mold from those guys. And you couldn't do it last year because you had Johnny Wilson and Coleman, so they had to split that work on the outside. I think you could see Benson, in the absence of, you know, a viable wide receiver two, get the lion's share of what was divided up amongst two guys last year, making him, you know, pretty attractive. What's his ADP been? I want to say right around 10, 11, if anecdotally.
I think so. It was around the 20th round, and it's been moving up. And
oh, you're 15th. Kidding me. He was in the 20th. Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So he's moving up in like the 15th round ADP, but he's very very affordable. And like, honestly, like, Florida State needs to go into the portal and get a wide receiver too, or they're going to be hurting. And I do think Malik Benson fits that profile. I love that you brought up Calvin Austin because he fits, right? That profile of the traditional Mike Norvell. Let's just run a nine route and go. And they like to do that a ton. And that just wasn't Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson's game as much.
No, definitely not.
So, but you see Malik Benson more with that ability, and you see DJU, like, if he's just got to make that decision, right? I mean, that's a throw that he can make for sure.
Gosh, you'd like to see one of Hakeem Williams. Like, when's it going to be his turn? You'd love to see that happen. I mean, highly rated. Destin Hill might be over if they go in the portal for him. It's like, come on, guys.
And I think he got hurt, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. I think it's a pretty severe injury. And Hakeem Williams according to reports, he just hasn't taken the next step yet in his development. So it's just like, what are they going to do here?
They were hoping he would be the one to step into that role. And that hasn't happened. Not good for your CTC and Dynasty shares.
Yeah. Quick question here. Shane asked, how bad was Benson's ankle injury? Reports are from insiders at FSU that it's not that bad. He'll be back for the fall. He should be fine. Just a tweak. When they were, I saw reports that, he got carted off, and they made it sound so bad before I actually got to watch the game. I was like, man, this guy's cooked. But luckily, I think he's going to be okay, and he's going to be able to come back fine for them. So, look, I think some of this is good news for Malik Benson in the sense of there's not a clear wide receiver too. And Roydell Williams, again, if he gets that Trey Benson role, which he looks like he's very capable of doing, and they may need him to do that, then he's going to be really viable too. And I've been getting him mid-20s every draft. So this is just a sweet spot to get a Roydell Williams. So if his ADP doesn't move up, then that's nice. Go ahead, Zach.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I really like Roydell Williams where he's going right now. I mean, there's 80 running backs going ahead of him in drafts. And the one thing that's always scared me off of Florida State just a little bit. Ever since Norvell got there, we haven't had a 1,000-yard rusher yet or receiver. But running back is inching closer and closer every year. And we saw Benson go with 9 touchdowns and then 14. So I think this is a year where I don't know if he's going to hit those Benson numbers, but it's definitely looked better the last 2 years than it did the first two. So I think that Roydell Williams value is great. And kind of back to Mike's point too, DJU, where there's 45 quarterbacks going ahead of him, and just with the potential upside that you can get in this system, that seems like a really good value. And last, Josh, I feel like you keep trying to push me to bump up Benson's projection. I'm not ready to do it yet, but maybe we'll get there.
A man can try. What do you guys think about this question? So Toefele, I mean, you hit on him, Froton. I mean, he is talented. And again, the reports coming out of campus that he's really taken another step. But do you think he's a threat to Roydell Williams? Or, they always have a two-back system. So personally, I'm not too concerned. But what do you think?
I he's going to get his work. I mean, he was there last year. So he would be viewed as the incumbent. But it's pretty obvious what his skill set is. Again, he's on the thinner range. He's not going to be grinding out the tough yards that I see the role, that 1-2 down role that I think you're going to get out of Roydell Williams. I think he's pretty clearly the passing down back, and you will see him sort of spell in with 3 down packages, because why not? I mean, he's an explosive rusher. If you've watched the Florida State games past couple of years, he has a knack for when that offense is kind of, they need kind of a kick. They need a little jump start. Like, all right, it's been sluggish for a little bit. They lean on him a little bit, and he can hit those 15-yard chunk plays. So I do think he will have a substantial role, and I think that's what's suppressing Roydell Williams. But I do think that Roydell Williams will have the lion's share role. He will certainly have the short yardage and goal line role I mean, that we saw, like you said, 14 touchdowns out of Trey Benson last. I think he should eventually carve that out. And down the stretch, he will get that sort of two-thirds share that, you know, he asserts himself with. My call.
Yeah. No, I like that. Hey, we're going to take a quick break here in a minute. But before we do, I want to throw up this question. And we're going to talk about this question when we come back. It's how do you see, if at all, Edwards impacting Giddens' projections for the season? Mike, I want you to take that question. I want you to answer it. And then we're going to talk about Oregon spring game after this break. All right, we're back. Andy Ewald asked the question, how do you see, if at all, Edwards, that's Dylan Edwards, transfer from Colorado to Kansas State? That happened today or yesterday. How do you see him impacting Giddens' projections for this season?
I personally didn't touch, I've already updated this. I didn't really touch DJ Giddens' numbers much at all. Maybe a slight decrease, but I really bumped up. It was a situation, and we talked about this all offseason, of the reason we like DJ Giddens so much is because there's nobody behind him, right? So realistically, my numbers were really impacted at the RB2 spot. I mean, this is a team in Kansas State that's going to run the football 55 to 60% of the time. So, you know, it's going to be a run-based offense. So really, I think I touched DJ Giddens' projection down slightly in the passing game just because that's where Dylan Edwards specializes. And I haven't, you know, this just happened yesterday, so I haven't read up a ton on it. But I kind of viewed, and maybe you guys disagree, I kind of viewed Dylan Edwards' addition as they needed a running back too, but I think Giddens is clearly off to the NFL after this year. I look at Dylan Edwards 2025 kind of addition, more so than him impacting.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't think I have any, because he had Trayshon Ward there all year anyways, given towards the end of the year 21, 31, 28 carries. But besides those last three games of the year for Giddens, he only eclipsed 18 carries one time. And that was against UCF, which UCF just bred shootouts. I mean, it's just what they did last year when he popped 30 carries, 207 yards. But, you know, up until those last three games, you know, 300-yard games on the season. It wasn't like he was really tearing the top off. And we're kind of projecting Giddens based on the volume that he got towards the end of the season when he had 21 points, 18.5, 17.5, 32. But then if you look at the games right before that last four set, 7.5, 26, 30, 7, 13, 61, 8, 7, 13. So it was, he took a little while to ramp up to where he's at now. You know, and I don't think that the addition of, he cut his teeth. He paid his dues. I don't think the addition of Dylan Edwards has hurt him. Plus, Dylan's so little. He's like, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and I was looking at this too, and the reason I didn't touch it down too much, and I'm really not going to adjust DJ Giddens' rankings. If you look back 2 years ago, DJ Giddens had 90-some carries as the running back two, and Deuce Vaughn still finished as a top three running back C. So I don't see this addition impacting his projection too much, except maybe in the passing game where obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's a good point. What about you, Zach, as someone who does projections? Is this going to affect you at all for Giddens?
I would say along the same lines as Mike, I don't anticipate changing his projection too much. I really struggled with the RB2 here, and our projection for RB2 was lower than where it typically is in this system. So I think it just kind of gives us that RB2. And like Mike touched on, I mean, we've seen, you know, this a running back get. I mean, last year, Trayshon Ward had 125 attempts. We've seen that when they were at North Dakota State, where that second back was getting over 100 attempts, but that RB1 was still really valuable. I don't know. I was looking at it a little bit earlier today, and I just didn't see myself adjusting Giddens' projection much at all, if we even touch it.
Yeah. Totally agree. Love it. I like it. And hey, Mike, why don't you take us on to Oregon? We had an Oregon spring game this weekend, and give it to us, man. What'd you like? What'd you not like?
Yeah, I would say if you have invested, at least from my perspective, if you have invested in Oregon players in early best balls, I think you were pretty pleased with how the Oregon spring game went. Dylan Gabriel, a consensus top four quarterback in college fantasy this year. You know, I think it was a seamless transition. He completed 14 of 21 passes for 163 yards and 2 touchdowns. Seems like it's going to be just a seamless fit into this offense. I thought the big, you know, and I've seen it mentioned too, I thought it was really noticeable too how good the backup quarterbacks played. It's been, you know, I think everybody kind of assumed that Dante Moore is the QB2, and I would have him as QB2 right now as well, but I don't think there's a big difference between him and Austin Novosad in this spring game. So if you have invested in dynasty shares of Austin Novosad, if it's not at Oregon, it's going to be somewhere else. So you should be happy with his performance in the spring game as well. The biggest takeaway, I think, for me actually was, and I was surprised by this, Jordan James. And I know, look, everybody likes him. I know Froton's going to talk about how many dynasty shares that, of Jordan James that he has. And it wasn't even his running, like we all know he could run the football, right? He had 5 receptions in the spring game. And I mean, if I hadn't really had his projection anywhere close to what Marquise Irving did last year with 61 targets in 14 games. But man, if he can come close to that, I have him, you know, I think right now I have him between 15 and 20, maybe a little bit higher than that, but he's closer to top 10 range for me if he's going to get that kind of usage in the passing game. So seeing those 5 receptions out of him was really promising for his outlook in 2020. Running back 2, I think, is still up for grabs at the moment. Noah Whittington did not play in this game. FCS transfer Jay Harris did play in this game. He's been getting some hype in the in spring practices, and he, you know, to some, not Josh, but he looked the part in the spring game. So I think, you know, Jordan James had 11 touchdowns as the running back 2 behind Irving last year. So people can kind of spending some draft capital at the end of best ball drafts on one of those two. Wide receiver, I think they both looked the part, right? You're happy with Tez Johnson and Evan Stewart. Debatable as to who is ranked higher. I think all three of you guys had Evan Stewart as the higher ranked wide receiver. I am the opposite. I trust Tez Johnson a bit more than Evan Stewart right now, but both obviously are going to be drafted in the top 3 rounds of fantasy drafts, and they look good, both of them. So I don't think there's really a ton of bust factor with those two, but I would say this, and this is aside from Jordan James's receiving ability, it was notable to me, and Will Stein mentioned this, and then the beat writer mentioned this after the game, they can see Oregon using more than 4 receivers more often this year, right? Last year was primarily Tez, Gary Bryant, Trayshawn Holden, and then Troy Franklin, and not a lot of wide receivers outside of that got a lot of playing time. Notable that, you know, it's been mentioned a few times now that, you know, some of those underclassmen behind them, specifically Jurian Dickey, could find their way into the lineup more often. So while I do say that, you know, I think these guys, Tez Johnson, Evan Stewart, should comfortably be in the top 2 to 3 rounds, that could throw a wrench into those plans right there if they start, you know, incorporating Dickey and Kyle Casper and some of those underclassmen. So I think, again, Jordan James, receiving ability, and then the potential for, you know, more than the top 4 wide receivers being utilized were kind of my big takeaways from this spring game.
Yeah, I actually listened to an Oregon podcast from 247 after the spring game. They said something like 6 to 7 wide receivers could rotate. So I did hear that, you know, from them. So it is interesting. I just can't see. I mean, Tez Johnson's so dynamic and so fast. There's a drop off between him and Gary Bryant or whoever else you're going to try to throw in there at slot. And yeah, Evan Stewart, you know, he's a future first round pick in the NFL draft. So it feels hard for me. It feels like it affects whoever the wide receiver 3 is going to be, Trayshawn Holden or, you know, Gary Bryant, more than it does anybody else, just because I can't see them, you know, rotating that much with those two. But what do you guys think, Froton, Zach? Are you guys concerned about that?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to Stewart, you know, the way he was used last year at Texas A&M, it was a 75 to 25 ratio, you know, from wide to slot. So I do think that you will be able to see him flex inside. Doesn't always have to be, especially in four wide sets. I think most of the time you probably see him go inside, have Dickey move out, you know, who's the more prototypical 6'3", 6'4", out on the other side with Taj Holden. Trayshawn, not Taj Holden. Taj Holden is a former center for Maryland on the Maryland National Championship team back in the day. And I actually played rec league basketball against him, and I took a charge against Taj Holden. He's a large man. He sent me flying into the wall. So that being said, yeah, Trayshawn Holden on the other side. Old friend Trayshawn Holden, Alabama. Good for Trayshawn Holden. It's escaping the Alabama vortex, you know, hitting the portal and making them sit. So nothing. I do love Evan Stewart and Tez Johnson. I mean, all you have to do is watch some of those games and you figure out just how dynamic Tez Johnson was. He was the guy that was moving the sticks for that offense every single time while Troy Franklin was running his Jalen Hyatt routes, you know, flying down the sideline and doing a good job of the ball tracking, but not really doing it. Both of those guys are elite. And I think they will both find their way onto being targeted around double digit times per game, because you're going to find a way to get those guys the ball, and you get Dylan Gabriel. I'm not worried about that at all. Personally, no matter how many guys you're rotating, they're going to find the ball's going to find their way. I love Jordan James, as Michael alluded to, all around profile and skill set. Think he has C2C value, and you have to respect it. He would be eligible for 2025. Could be a pretty damn good C2C running back class there, obviously. And I think you could see him, you know, shake out as a top 10 running back who's draft worthy, you know, maybe file in the back end of the top five for all said and done. But he probably goes to first start in the year. They'll probably pay him in Oregon to kick around.
Zach?
Yeah, not a lot to add what you guys have already said. But I, you know, just after kind of seeing what these guys did, I just feel really good. Jordan James, the thing that's keeping him out of the top 10 was the receiving piece in our projections. And I think to Mike's point, very promising there. So looks like that could be a potential good value. I also, you know, how draft started, I really liked Evan Stewart's value to begin with, where you could kind of get him end of that second, middle of the second, is kind of pushed up. And I think we talked about this on a previous show, but Tez Johnson, where you were getting him, I started to really like his value. And then kind of after seeing this, the spring game, I'm still really liking where you can get him. I'm wondering if he'll get pushed up a little bit, just based on the performance, but still feel really good about where we have those Oregon guys and what that offense is going to be this year.
Yeah, and to bring in perspective with Jordan James too, the last two drafts that we've had in these Champions Leagues, I took him last draft at 4-1 and then the previous one at 4-5. He had been going in the third round, pretty much early third round for I think most, the first two or three, and that's kind of changing over here. I think you see that kind of kick back over. I mean, he went behind Malik Sherrod, he went behind Will Pauling, Mario Anderson, CJ Baxter, who I know you keep drafting Jaden Blue, and the Tito himself, Aronde Gadsden, who shouldn't exist. So, you know, that kind of gives you a perspective for James. It was going kind of early third, fourth. I think he probably settles mid third, anywhere in round three. I don't think anybody's ever going to bat an eyelash you taking Jordan James.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love Jordan James. I think he's going to be great this year. I will say, Jay Harris, just in case somebody listens to this and think I just hate him. I don't hate him. I think Jay Harris has a lot of raw talent, but also think he's a raw running back. He was very upright when he was running. He's very strong. But, you know, as part of this, you know, I just watch things from a Devy lens and future NFL lens so much that that stuff sticks out to me. So, but I do think his raw tools at 6'2", 215 are very good, but not enough to hinder Jordan James' workload at all this year.
Yeah, I just to add on to that, I probably would say, like, people have been targeting Noah Whittington or even Jay Harris at the end of drafts, thinking like, oh, they're going to assume Jordan James's like production from last year. And now with both Harris's performance in the spring game, I could probably see like that being split up between the two. So that might end up being a wasted selection at the end of drafts, in my opinion.
Last but not least, before we move on, shout out to Fergie, Terrence Fergie.
He was bad for dropping so many balls.
Come on now. He's going to be just fine. He is.
You're right. You are 100% right.
He's the guy. Like, he's going to have those snaps. It's established. He's an all Pac-12, RIP, former all Pac-12 tight. He's going to get those reps. He's going to get some touchdowns. Nice to have as a T4 at the end of best ball drafts. Again, certainty, security. We know what we're going to get out of him, and he's going to have probably 5-6 touchdowns again, maybe 7.
Yeah. No, I agree. He didn't look great in the spring game, but the workload looks pretty obvious. And
he's a big, he kind of reminds me of Stover a little bit, and he's a big tight end. He's not a smooth tight end. But totally. I mean, he's there. He gets all those snaps. And Herbert's little brother isn't.
No. Well, you know, let's go to a team. Let's go to a team with a little more controversy, in Washington State. And Zach, you're gonna drive the bus here in Washington State. Let us know what we need to know about their spring game.
Yeah. So unfortunately, I don't have Pac-12 Network, so I didn't get to watch the game in full. But I was able to watch some of the highlights through some videos on YouTube. A little bit different setup, at least that's how they portrayed it, where it wasn't necessarily the ones on offense and the twos, but they split up the teams, which was interesting. But they also had John Mateer with Josh Meredith and Kyle Williams. So I wondered if maybe they played it off like it wasn't the ones, but it feels like those were two of the top receivers coming out of the spring, at least into the spring game. So that was interesting to me. The first play of the scrimmage was a 75-yard little trick play that they had to John Mateer to the tight end Billy Revere. So that goes in his stat line as a 75-yard touchdown pass. But outside of that, Mateer ended 11 for 24 with 194 yards and 2 touchdowns. Rushing, he had six attempts for negative 10 yards. I don't think that's really going to be how they would use him. They weren't live, so that takes away from that quarterback run game a little bit. I was interested to see how Zevi Eckhouse did, who's really pushing Mateer for that QB1 spot. He was 19 for 30, but he did start out a little bit slower. He was 5 for 14 to start out, started to pick it up a little bit as the scrimmage went on, ended up with 196 yards, 2 touchdowns. So really similar to what Mateer did with his stat line. Couple good throws from him. He had a touchdown to Carlos Hernandez. One guy that stuck out that I don't, that he didn't do a whole lot outside of this, but a freshman running back, Wayshon Parker, had a nice 42-yard reception. He looked really good on that. I don't want to get too excited about a Washington State running back, but he looks like a playmaker out there, at least from that play. So that was interesting to see a freshman kind of mark that as a guy to keep in the back of my mind. I think the other piece I was really interested in is how these receivers looked and how they did. Like I said, Josh Meredith was running with Mateer. He ended up with 7 targets and he went 3 for 49 and had that touchdown. Kyle Williams had 4 targets, just caught 1 for 22 yards. Carlos Hernandez, 7 targets, 5 receptions, 65 yards and a touchdown, had a 31-yard touchdown from Eckhouse. And then Chris Hudson, 4 receptions for 11 yards, but he led the game with 9 targets, which was interesting. He just didn't, it looked like they were really trying to get him, just get the ball in his hands and have him make some plays. Just wasn't really there, with him. And then the running backs, which I don't think we're super interested in, but the Schlenbaker, I'm not even sure how you say that. He had 16 attempts for 106 yards and a touchdown. I don't know if that's really going to be something we rely on in season, but he did get the bulk of the carries there. Payne is kind of that RB2 right now. He had five attempts for 50 yards. And then that Wayshon Parker, the guy that had that 42-yard reception, he just had one rush. Rush. So overall, I don't know. I'll be interested to see what you guys think. I know Josh, you still really like Eckhouse here. It felt like Mateer kind of came in as QB1. I feel like afterwards, everything you're reading and just kind of what you saw, just felt like he had a pretty good command of that offense. again, I was just seeing highlights, so it's really hard to know too much about that. Probably the slight edge to him, but I thought Eckhouse had some really good plays, some really nice throws in there as well. And he had a scramble for like 30 yards. So I think that's something that in that offense, they're probably going to have that piece. And he showed that he really has that. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know if we got a ton of answers from the spring game. I do feel like all the reports kind of point to Meredith as kind of that top inside guy, which is what we want in this offense. But I think Chris Hudson is also right there and could be a big piece of this offense as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. And then, you're going to have Kyle Williams on the outside, but it also Hernandez kind of had some good plays, and he had some good scrimmages in the past as well, just outside of the spring game. So it'll be really interesting to see, and interested to hear what you guys think about where this offense is going to go.
Yeah, I mean, this is a battle that I paid a lot of attention to, and I do like Xavi Eckhouse, so I'm a little slanted. I think ultimately it's going to come down to, I think Mateer is the guy that can make plays outside of the structure of the offense. I think he's a more dynamic runner. I think he's got a bigger arm than Eckhouse, but I do think Eckhouse is, if they want to play within the structure of Ben Arbuckle's offense, then he is a better suited to do that overall. I love the ball that he throws. I think he's athletic enough to play within that system, but like, I don't know what they ultimately want. I mean, I think Mateer maybe has a higher ceiling for that offense than Eckhouse does. And so that's what they want to go off of. Then I think they go with Mateer. You know, as much as I like Eckhouse, I think if we're sitting here today, I think you have to go with Mateer because he came in as the QB1 starting out, and he's still the QB1. But what happens in the next 3 or 4 months, I think it's, you know, it'd be very interesting to see all that play out.
Yeah, I think I've also followed this one pretty closely. I would give probably 60-40 advantage to Mateer. You know, they've, just going off practice reports, they've kind of flip-flopped back and forth of who had the better day, but it always seemed like Mateer was kind of that guy to run with the ones first in practices. So I would give him the slight edge personally. My take kind of, I think it's notable who wins this job to determine, and this is,
I know what you're about to say. I know what you're about to say, and it's so true.
Yeah, I think if Mateer wins this job, I heavily favor Meredith as the wide receiver one. And I think if Eckhouse, then it's probably Hudson. And it, you know, you look at the stats in the spring game, and that's obvious, like that would be the obvious choice, but that's kind of how it's been in practices too. Like when Eckhouse has been playing, like Hudson has been the better of the two receivers in the slot. So that's just kind of my takeaway, that I would, you know, I would pay attention to who wins this job, and I would line it up kind of to who wins that slot receiver job. Because as we all know, and this could totally blow up, because I personally watch this game, and I don't know, even playing a Mount West schedule, I don't know that Washington State's going to be very good. They've been decimated by the transfer portal and lack of NIL budget. But obviously, if you pick the right guys here at slot receiver and quarterback, these are, you know, potential top 10. I hate this. John Mateer is, he's my highest projected quarterback, just because he can run, and how often Washington State throws the football under Ben Arbuckle. I will not have John Mateer as my, obviously, QB1, but that's just the upside. It shows you the upside of if we get a consensus QB1 here in this system.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's obvious the import of this air raid system, what it's done over the years. You have to respect it, especially moving down a level, being in the Mountain West. Like, all right, well, let's see what we can do here. That's obviously pretty appealing given the roster and relative recruiting strength. So, yeah, I think you guys covered everything else pretty succinctly.
Yeah. Yep, I totally agree. Hey, next up, we are going to have USC. But before that, we're going to take a quick break, and then we can come up and wrap up the rest of these spring games. All right, take it away, Froton.
USC, a game that I happen to be fortunate enough to attend in person. I don't know if you guys saw that on the X Machine, but was right there on the field. Thank you, NBC Sports. And, you know, got to see these guys live and direct. And if there was anything I could say about the offense, Miller Moss did not look quite as good as he did against Louisville in the bowl game in his first start when he threw for 6 touchdown passes. Another game that I was on the field in attendance for, that was the Holiday Bowl in San Diego. So I have seen both of Miller Moss's starts, and let me say they were two diametrically opposed results. Looked really good against a skeleton crew of Louisville. It had a lot of guys out, but against kind of new look USC defense, hiring the ex coordinator of UCLA, who put together such an effective couple of defense the past 2 years, and bringing in a lot of transfers. The first half, all quarterbacks, both Moss and Mayava, threw 3 interceptions, and they proceeded to throw another 2 in the second half. So in terms of, you know, what they were doing, when Moss threw the interceptions, he was short on a couple of, you know, one was an out and up that he faked the out, and he just never got it up, and just literally floated it right into the arms of the defensive back, who just cut the route off. He wasn't, you know, running down the field and just happened to kind of edge his way in. No. He was running the receiver, stopped, pivoted, let the ball sail onto his chest, and then ran it back for a touchdown on one play. So, you know, definitely I was concerned by what I saw from Miller Moss there in his performance. I don't think it's possible to not be concerned. He did settle down in the second half, which did sort of, you know, rescue the performance in a way, I suppose you could say, but did not do much to really distinguish himself, despite the fact that he's and has been waiting for this opportunity for a long time. Seems to be a system quarterback, doesn't have the big arm. That being said, we'll move on to the running backs. Jacavius Marks, Woody Marks, got a few carries. Like, he was out there and, you know, managed to make his presence felt and do a little bit, you know, 4 carries, 29 yards, looked good, looked the part, kept his work limited, no problem. It was more so Amarian Peterson got a lot of work, to be honest, with, you know, kind of surprising to see Quentin Joyner only get 1 carry. You know, he had overshadowed. I really liked what I saw from him in the spring game last year, and he had out touched Peterson, I think, during the season. So that was kind of a surprise, with Brian Jackson kind of doing the second team yeoman's work, 10 carries, 23 yards, scored a touchdown, really didn't look too explosive. It was also tough for running backs. You don't know if that's going to be, you know, if this carry is going to be 3 yards or if he breaks through it, because they weren't doing full tackle, they were doing wrap. So do think that it'll be interesting, and I didn't really see a difference maker between Peterson and Joyner for that RB2 role, which is really what we're looking at in there. Marks is secured as the one. Wide receiver group is really what we're here for. And asking people around the program, because unfortunately, you know, that's up in LA, I'm in San Diego, I can't be up there and watch all those practices, but I made sure to, you know, ask around and talk to people and get a feel for specifically the wide receiver room. And first name on everyone's mouth is obviously, it's almost like a given. It's like, all right, you know, so which wide receivers are standing out? And they're like, well, you know, Zachariah. It's sort of like that given. It's like, he's electric. And he will have that. They'll move him around the formation everywhere. I mean, you can call him the wide receiver one, but he's going to be slot, outside, you know, flexed, jet. They're gonna get pretty creative with him. And they did in the spring game. He wasn't doing much downfield. Everything he did was manufactured or within, you know, like 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. So, you know, like, oh yeah, let's check the Zachariah Branch box, but then moving on to the outside. And, you know, a real honey hole in history is a USC X wide receiver. I know that's not the case for Lincoln Riley, but, you know, we've seen Drake Lund. Brendan Rice was still pretty effective last year. If you had a guy who emerged a little more, you know, he could do a little more in terms of the numbers. Taj Washington was a Y, but there's going to be production that's going to be had by somebody on that outside. And I would have to say the early favorite is Jacoby Lane, which certainly wasn't the case in terms of the recruiting, the way that all went down. Mekhi Lemon and Deuce Robinson were more heralded recruits. But Jacoby Lane just has that look. He kind of looks like Pittman, where he's got that long classic X frame, incredible ball tracking skills and agility. You saw in the game itself, he made a twisting catch to his across the middle that he took and broke up the field. He also made an incredible catch in the back of the end zone that was one of the best catches of the day. They were both the two best catches of the day. He caught the ball, comes down, is rolling with it on the ground, has it secured, and the D-back raked it out of his hands. It was an amazing catch that doesn't go down in the stat book. It is an amazing catch and a true power X move, but he did it. He caught that pass, and I was kind of happy about, like, ooh, I can get Jacoby Lane, which I did in our last draft because of it. So now the cat's out of the bag. Sorry, guys. I like him the most. Also, but, you know, just looking at him as a whole, Deuce Robinson had his moments. He caught four passes. Mekhi Lemon had a touchdown pass led. You know, all four of these guys, it's pretty close in terms of who will and how they're going to interchange and who plays when, where. I think you see Lemon, who's, you know, a little bit shorter in size. You're not going to see Lane or Robinson really be able to flex into the slot like Lemon can to spell Branch. So I do think that you'll see a lot of Lane is going to be the number, the X on the outside, I think primarily. And then you'll see kind of a, you know, a switching of the guard between Lemon and Deuce. If I had to pick one between Lemon or Deuce Robinson is extremely long. Like, you notice him. Oh my gosh. And Jacoby is too. But, you know, Lemon kind of reminds me a little more of Branch. I think he'll get a little more time. So I think you'll see him, because of versatility, get a few more snaps than Deuce Robinson. So that's
where Eric, have you been one of those that have been drafting Branch inside the top 8 to 10 rounds? Because I have an issue with that.
I know you do. I took him in the 10th two drafts ago. I didn't get him this draft. I switched over to Ja'Cory after being at the game. So I took Ja'Cory in like the 24th, I want to say. Jacoby, excuse me, not Ja'Cory, Jacoby. So that's kind of giving me my preference. I think Lemon and Deuce might have gone undrafted. Maybe one of them went drafted, but they might have.
Deuce for sure, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
I pick a Lemon a lot in late drafts because I'm just like, you know, why not take a shot on a USC wide receiver in rounds 25 through 30?
Here's my issue, particularly with Branch, but I'm starting to even question Mekhi Lemon and Lane too, just a little bit. You know, and the target share is the obvious reason, right? There hasn't been a Lincoln Riley receiver get more than 16% target share in the last 4 years. They've really spread it around. My issue is that you bring in Jay Fair from Auburn, you bring in Kyle Ford from back to USC from UCLA. I know USC tends to rotate 6, 7, 8 guys, but that also lends to the fact that they don't have a guy, in my opinion. Right, you can talk about the 5-star profile of Zachariah Branch, but he also caught one pass in the bowl game. So I don't know.
He didn't pop in the spring game either. He got some short yardage manufactured touches, but it wasn't like he was out there ripping it off. He had 4 catches for 40 yards. He had a 23 yarder that he caught and ripped, and then it was just three other short.
Not to pile on Branch, but the guy wasn't even the statistically the best receiver on his high school team. I mean, this is a guy that's never led his team in receiving yards, even in high school. And so
you're banking on 5-star status for selecting him in the top 10 rounds. I don't think you go get Jay Fair and Kyle Ford. I'm not saying these guys are difference makers none the least, but like, you are also going after Keandre Lambert Smith. You're not going after or signing all these guys if you are solidified, in my opinion, with your top, you know, top star.
It's a young group. All of them are sophomores. So it's possible he's looking at this and saying, all right, well, where's the experience in this room? There's nobody. Nobody. So that's probably what they look at. Jaden Richardson's a senior. He got like some nominal targets. It's a crew of second year players. So that makes a lot of sense. I will say the freshman who stuck out, Xavier Jordan. Yeah.
I read some stuff on him too. They were really
legit. Yeah. I'll be targeting him in freshman drafts. Liked what I saw from him. So definitely check the boxes from what I saw from Xavier.
That's good. All right. We're going to try to get through these last four spring games very quickly here. But we have up next, I believe it's me doing Louisville. And what I'll say about Louisville, watch that game. It was very good to get some eyes on Tyler Shuck. And Tyler Shuck is, when he's healthy, he's pretty good. You can throw a ball. And the question is whether he can stay healthy. But him and Chris Bell had a good connection. Corey Brooks didn't play in this game. Colin Lacey was limited because he was hurt. So big takeaway. I think Tyler Shuck is worth where he's going, rounds 15 to 20, if he can stay healthy. The other big takeaway for me, this is going to be a running back by committee. The two guys that I think most people are going after, Maurice Turner and Don Chaney, and Kewan Brown and Isaac Brown, who's a true freshman, good dynasty stash there, were the best running backs on the field, in my opinion. So I'd stay away from running backs. I don't think we're going to have a repeat of last year at all. And Tyler Shuck, man, if that dude can stay healthy, I think he can have a pretty decent year in that offense. He looks tailor-made for the Louisville Jeff Brohm offense. Any thoughts?
I was going to mention Chris Bell. Just you know, he had the big spring game, as we all saw. Yep. But I was kind of just reading up a little bit further on that. And I really liked what Shuck and Brohm said about him, just commenting about his strong work ethic. And I thought, and it realized this too, like he was a distant second in targets with 42 last year, but he wasn't like fully healthy until like right up until the start of the season. So he didn't have a full offseason last year to kind of establish himself. So now he's getting that, and maybe we're seeing the you know, why he's getting so much hype right now. So that was a kind of big takeaway from the game.
It wasn't like he was lacking in hype last offseason either, because we heard about him in camp. We heard about him in spring last year, at least in camp, I want to say. We were hearing a lot of report about how Bell was a pretty dominant outside wide receiver, and that was something that they didn't have, where Jamari Thrash was more of that, you know, 6'1", 180. He didn't have that dominant physical profile in the same way. Could be his comeuppance time. And as discussed with Shuck, ultimate honey hole, the Jeff Brohm, the Brohm brothers, traveling circus, passing show, being their quarterback. Only Jack Plummer has managed to turn that into a milquetoast college fantasy position. I'm not saying Tyler Shuck can't. He's just coming off of Texas Tech. He managed to turn that into a milquetoast fantasy position. So I think that Tyler Shuck is certainly capable of doing a little two-for-one special here, and making it a painful college fantasy experience owning the Brohm brothers quarterback. But, you know, history says otherwise. So until then, go for it. Just know before you draft Tyler Shuck that 2 years ago, I tried to pay him twice his going rate to do a cameo and pick the Big 12 division for the 50-teamer draft that we do, College Fantasy League. He was going to pick the 10-person draft. And he agreed to it. And then 2 days later, came back and asked for $1,500 to pull a draft order. So I politely said no, Mr. Shuck.
What was it? Was it just $50 to start?
No, it was $30 was cameo.
Going rate. Right?
Then I said, I'm going to double your going rate, Mr. Tyler Shuck. I'm going to give you $60. All you have to do is film a 45-second video. Just pick names out of a hat. Just pick names out of a hat for a fun little league, and you're good. I'll give you $60. He came back with $1,500. I was like, bro, you don't know how this works, do you? Like, I don't care. I'll pull the thing. I literally pulled it. It was like, yeah, I'll pull it for zero. I'm gonna be more entertaining than you. All right,
that's amazing. All right.
I wonder if he's getting $1,500 from Louisville NIL.
What's your like he is? Hope he's getting something, man. You know,
there
best
we go.
Of luck for his last year in college. But I will let you know, I have one C2C share that I had that's a legacy share from forever ago. And other than that, I have not taken one solitary Tyler shot.
There we go. Glad the opinion has been
personal,
has been dated, stamped. Love it. Mike, why don't you take us on to Notre Dame? Give us a quick, brief rundown of Notre Dame, and then we can move this through this pretty quickly.
Yeah, I didn't have a ton of takeaways from this game, just mainly for the fact that a lot of the perceived starters on offense didn't really play. Obviously, Riley Leonard was unavailable because of the foot injury that he suffered last year. We didn't see Jadarian Price in the backfield. He didn't play. Bo Collins wasn't available. I don't know if he's going to be a starter or not, but I don't believe he was there in the spring potentially. I don't know for certain, but I know he didn't play in the spring game. Tight end Mitchell Evans, who I know Eric loves, also unavailable in this game. So we didn't get to see a lot of the perceived starters. So you're really getting a look at the backups and maybe future starters down the road from a dynasty perspective. I thought the quarterbacks were solid. You know, nothing spectacular. Steve Angeli looked good, 17 of 25 completions for 228 yards and two scores. He obviously led Notre Dame to that blowout bowl win against Oregon State last year. CJ Carr, I think, was the story amongst most Notre Dame fans. Looks the part, even though he chose the wrong school, should have gone to Michigan. But yeah, he looks like the future at the position for Notre Dame after the spring game. Running back, I thought Jeremiah Love on that 17-yard touchdown run looked really explosive. Also, kind of similar to what we talked about with Jordan James, added four or five catches in the receiving game too, so that's obviously a plus for his kind of fantasy outlook. We'll see what it looks like when Jadarian Price gets healthy and back into the fold. Personally, I think it's going to be a split between the two this year. You know, and then work in some of the younger guys behind them. So I'm not really investing too much in the backfield right now, but you can obviously get them in the, you know, close to the 20th round range. So you're not having to spend up for those two receivers. Chris Mitchell, the Florida international transfer, did his thing. Obviously, we know him as a deep threat. Caught a 62-yard touchdown pass. Freshman Micah Gilbert really stood out to me with two touchdowns. Context always matters, though. Both of those touchdowns by Mitchell and Gilbert were against walk-on cornerbacks. So context always matters in these spring games. So my question to the group is, do you guys see any, like, nobody's getting drafted consistently from Notre Dame inside, you know, the first 10 rounds. I haven't really, like, the only guy I would consider is Riley Leonard. Is there anybody else that you see here that could be drafted within the first 10 to 12 rounds in fantasy drafts?
Nah, not for me. There's nobody I'm taking anywhere in that range. I think, you know, we'll have to see what ultimately happens throughout. I mean, maybe Riley Leonard during fall camp gets some kind of hype. But yeah, for me, I think all those guys are sliding.
That was kind of, that's kind of my takeaway too, is like, the depth on offense, I think, is drastically improved. You know, the wide receiver core was absolutely terrible last season. You know, Jaden Greathouse, I think, was the MVP, according to some beat writers. So, you know, Adon Mitchell, potentially Bo Collins, maybe Micah Gilbert makes an impact. You know, the depth at running back too with Love and Price. But I don't know that I see an actual difference made on this offense outside of potentially Riley.
I have some Jeremiah Love shares. I think I, in the second to last best ball league, I think I grabbed him like the 20th round or so. I had to get what I felt to be an appropriate value to select him. But I don't think it's a bad thing if you're looking at a best ball format or, you know, even a regular larger dynasty league to have Price and Love in this, which one of them comes out on the other side. I know it's potentially, you know, someone else could take it. I think those will be the two. I don't like hearing Love splitting out. I mean, I like it, but I don't at the same time. I want a running back who's getting 20 carries, ideally. But I do like Greathouse. Not within the first 12 rounds, though. So, I mean, I feel like you have... There's some intrigue here that I don't feel like there was last year with Notre Dame. We do forget that traditionally there's been one wide receiver for the Irish, and it's been somebody who's been at least wide receiver three worthy. You know, even Kevin Austin was still worth, you know, having on a roster, even if he wasn't that great. But, you know, we've had some other more effective guys in recent years, like the Will Fullers and what have you. So I'm not ready to write off Greathouse. I think at the end of drafts, it feels like there's so many wide receivers you could look at in round 27, 28, 29, 30 of these drafts that are viable options. I think you could toss Gradu, and Mitchell Evans is a star. He's not being treated like it. I'm getting him. I think got him in the 18th round last draft. That's an absolute atrocity. Y'all ought to be ashamed of yourselves for letting me do that. Okay, it literally was. It was the 18th round. I got Mason Taylor 11th, Mitchell Evans 18th, our boy Fergie in the 21st. And those are three dependable tight ends that I know are going to perform. So I think he's a top 10 tight end. I think he will produce. Bye-bye Holden stays. He's not even there anymore because he knows what's coming with Mitchell Evans. You know, he's going to have a Michael Mayer type season. So you heard it here first. That's what's about to happen.
I will say if Steve Angeli is the guy, then Eli Raridan is going to get a million targets because that is the only person that Angeli went after in the spring game. It was kind of, it was laughing, you know, it was pretty
Peter
funny.
Peanut butter and jelly is not taking over that role. Okay. And I'm remiss for saying got to watch CJ Carr for 3 days at the Elite 11 final in Redondo Beach. Love him. My QB6 from this class, and he is going to throw Mr. Peanut Butter and Jelly in a locker. It's over. Time to transfer, Mr. and Jelly. CJ Carr is taking that job, so I'm not remotely worried about that situation.
Zach, you got final thoughts here?
Yeah, just real quick. I haven't really touched any Notre Dame player yet this year, but something that's interesting to me about Riley Leonard, he's out of the top QBs. He's one that's starting to drop, so he was going roughly round 9-10, and now he's dropped to round 13. It's not a huge drop, but he was about QB 22, and now he's QB 31. So the last few drafts he's a guy that's kind of started to drop, which is interesting to me. If he drops much farther down, I think he starts to become a really good value.
Forget about Ian Book and how well he was able to produce from a fantasy perspective. He wasn't a top 12, but I mean, Ian Book was a solid starter during his last couple. So, you know, there's a path, and Riley Leonard will run a little bit.
Yeah, Denbrock has done a lot with a little in his past as a play caller. So I like that a lot.
Last but not least, RIP Tobias Merriweather. We'll miss him.
Tobias. The never nude Tobias, obviously a Arrested Development.
Yes, nice. I like the call out. I think that's a good way to end the show. RIP Merriweather. He's a bust for me and a guy that I really wanted to be good over there at Notre Dame and never came to fruition. But
I could give a quick one more on San Diego State, since it doesn't matter who the players are. I will say this. Being here in San Diego, have some friends of the program, have some people around the program who have, are involved in it and did some digging around. There is an exodus from the portal. 25 players from the San Diego State that were in there in the beginning of spring have hit the portal. Essentially, Sean Lewis, new head coach, came in with all those freshman Hoke type recruits and whatever have you, and laid it all out for them. The ones who weren't going to make it. And they're just like, look, you are holdovers from the Hoke class. It's not going to work out for you here. You know, we wish you the best of luck, but you know, your scholarship is no longer here. Pulled 25 guys go in the portal. And it was just the first salvo was Marquez Cooper. Okay. Marquez Cooper just went and transferred over there. You're going to see an exodus to San Diego State. Apparently, there's some booster money that's come in that had been held out during the Hoke and Long era, because what's the point? Now with Lewis there, like, they're in. He laid it down for him and said, you want wins, I'm going to get you wins. You got to give me players. You're going to start seeing some players heading over to San Diego State. They got a little bit of NIL money. They're going the portal route. It's going to be a glorified, you know, a light version of Colorado, but 25 scholarships, 25 guys have gone in from San Diego State. You're going to see a whole bunch come in, and call it a hunch. I have no idea about this, but didn't Colin Schley just hit the portal, you know, recently for UCLA?
But he wants to go out. He's been said he wants to go back east. So
why would Sean Lewis go and hit up Colin Schley? Because I know for a fact that quarterback room is a catastrophe. AJ Duffy is not working out. I see him still getting drafted in our leagues. Every time he does, I smile. He's not going to be the guy. And, you know, basically it's kind of a free for all. From what I understand, they are looking to bring somebody in. So I don't think the current quarterback is on that roster. And I think you can definitely see other wide receivers to come out. Nobody's really separated themselves in the wide receiver room. Harrison looks good, who transferred over from Colorado. He'll eat. Definitely in that tight end role. But still very much up in the air as far as wide receivers. I think see somebody come in and definitely a quarterback too.
Yeah. Well, I love those Nuggets. Man, we got through 7 of 8 spring games. Not bad for us. We only went a little bit over on time. Next week, man, you're not going to want to miss next week, because we are going to talk about both a little bit of the transfer portal, and we're going to talk about best ball and do a little bit of an update on these CFF best balls that we've been participating in, that we keep mentioning, and talk about, man, ADP movement. The last time we talked about this was end of March, early April. So we want to come back and talk to you guys about who's moving up and down and what we like and where Deion Burks is going.
Yeah, I was going to say with Deion Burks, round 6 ADP.
Nobody likes Nick Anderson. It's team Nick Anderson. All right. If you want it out there, Nick Anderson's going to have more fantasy points than Deion Burks.
Hey, I've been actually taking the Nick Anderson discount. So I'm with you on that.
Hell yeah, you should take the Nick Anderson discount. He was a smoking deal this last draft. I've been the one who's been taking him, and I purposely didn't take him this draft. Went pick 4, round 10 to Michael Bainbridge.
And I got Jackson Arnold paired with him too.
Dude, that's been my stack. That's been my stack, brother. Now you're over here taking my stacks?
I was trolling you that entire draft.
Know that.
Wilson, Jackson Arnold.
I know, I claim everything.
Well, look.
And Juwan Newton. I drafted Juwan Newton, too. I've never had a share of Juwan Newton.
Dude, he went pretty late, though, Juwan Newton.
He did.
In fairness, yeah. I feel like I have so much Juwan Newton exposure. It's like, hey, Fro, relax, buddy. How about you? 24th round, Juwan Newton. A steal. Just dependable. Like we're talking about these best ball leagues. You know he's going to be out there. I mean, he's got 3 years of established track record in Toledo. You got Tucker Gleason, who's going to be throwing more than Daquan Finn did.
I was going to say that too. We're going long now, but they're going to throw a lot. They're going to 200 carries with Jaquez Stewart.
Dude, we just had a perfect ending here. We had
wide receiver Jaquez Stewart. I got a lot of Jaquez Stewart. That is my guy, right? Can we agree? My guy, Stewart.
Your guy.
He can be your guy. Unfortunately, we had a great way. We started the show with Jackson Arnold. We were going to end it with Jackson Arnold. And then y'all got to talk about Juwan Newton and Tucker Gleason, who, by the way, went to Plant High School, where I got some connections to. But since we're ending the show with me, then we're going to end with Tucker Gleason at Plant High School.
And with Shane, when am I going to get in one of the Carb's best balls? I'll get in one now that the NFL draft is over. And thanks to Dan Brown, who did some yeoman's work there in the chat out here this show. Like, great work, giving us quotes and everything. And thanks, Kevin Coleman, for stopping by.
Love it. Hey, if you guys like this show, please like, comment, subscribe. Join us every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Love for you guys to be here. Man, the more interactive that we can have this show, the better it's going to be. Until the next time, do small things with great love.
Thanks for tuning in to this edition of the Fantasy Points Podcast. Remember to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite platform. And come join the roster at fantasypoints.com.